Good morning. This is Hugh LaFollette, your host for Ideas and Issues. On our program this week, I'm talking with John Dee, professor of philosophy at Northwestern University, and we're discussing Louis Menand's Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Metaphysical Club, A Story of Ideas in America. John, glad to have you on the show.
Oh, it's a great pleasure to be on the show, Hugh.
Could you begin by giving the listener a sort of brief overview of The Metaphysical Club?
This is a very impressive book, and the sweep in the discussion is terrific. It covers about 100 years of intellectual history in the United States, beginning in the early decades of the 19th century and ending in the early decades of the 20th century. And it's a story, but there are actually many stories. The core story is a story about the rise of pragmatism, which is the distinctive American contribution to philosophy. And Menand tells this story by looking at the key figures who are the developers of pragmatism. These would be William James, Charles Sanders Peirce, Jr., John Dewey, and Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr. And Menand is very interested in how these four individual thinkers came to the views that they had in response to the earlier generation of thinkers in American society. Now, three of them, the Peirce and James and Holmes, were all part of the high Boston intellectual society, and their fathers were all major figures in Boston. And so part of the story is a story about fathers and sons and how the sons were reacting to the father's ideas. But another large part, and perhaps even more important part of the story, is the role of the Civil War in shaping the ideas of the generation that followed the Civil War, and how to understand pragmatism as a philosophy that came in reaction to the Civil War. And much of what Menand tries to do is to explain the flexibility in pragmatism and the openness to different ideas and the way ideas are formed and different beliefs and the way belief systems come about as a response to rigidities which were characteristic of the sides that were fighting in the Civil War, particularly the Union side and its anti-slavery ideas and its powerful attack on slavery and as especially represented by the abolitionists.
Okay, that actually leads very nicely into my next question. Could you say more about this account of the history of pragmatism? He sees pragmatism as arising primarily as a reaction to particular historical circumstances. And you mentioned the Civil War. How is it, in his account, that the Civil War did shape the thinker, the views of the thinkers who followed?
Well, Menand starts with Holmes as his first person whose intellectual development typifies the development of pragmatism. And Holmes began as a staunch abolitionist, and he served in the army, the Massachusetts contribution to the army in the Civil War, as a volunteer in the fight against slavery. And he began being an abolitionist and a very staunch abolitionist as someone with great certainty about the wrongfulness of slavery and the need to abolish it. And the war and the war experiences that he had, according to Menand, had such a powerful effect on him, the violence and the horror and the terror of warfare had such a powerful effect on him that he came away in the end with a belief about beliefs, or an idea about ideas, as Menand puts it, namely that they're not ever worth fighting for, because when people fight for their ideas, they end up engaging in these violent wars that are extraordinarily destructive of human life. And he tells, the first three chapters are very powerful, and he tells how Holmes went through the war and the wounds that he suffered and the friends he saw die in Civil War battles, and he brings very nicely to life just the intensity and the violence and the horror of the Civil War and of many of the famous battles that were fought in the Civil War. And so Holmes represents, I think, ideally Menand's thesis. Namely, he started out as a youth with very strong convictions. On the basis of his war experience, he came to see that those convictions, whether right or wrong, should not be held as if they were certitudes. And as a result, according to Menand, Holmes's judicial philosophy and his legal philosophy — Holmes was a great jurist, well, probably America's greatest jurist — his judicial philosophy became shaped by the idea that what matters is experiences and not firm commitments to ideas and beliefs, regardless of one experiences. The others in the group that Menand is writing about, James and Peirce and Dewey, all represent the same kind of view about ideas and beliefs, namely that they should be responsive to experiences and that they should not be held just as dogmas or as pieces of ideology. And Menand thinks that they too were influenced by the Civil War and by the violence of the Civil War in developing these ideas. So that pragmatism, which is distinctively a philosophy about the nature of ideas and beliefs, and in particular that they are beliefs that we come to hold and whose truth depends on experiences in human life and on solving problems in human life, pragmatism can be seen in this way as having been a philosophy formed as a rejection of the very ideological and rigid views of the generation preceding the pragmatists, and that were most committed to and responsible for the Civil War.
So on his view, the pragmatists, though, don't need to say that ideas are irrelevant, simply that we always ought to be open to the fact that our ideas, no matter how strongly we hold them, might be wrong, might be false. And if they might be false, then they're not the sorts of things about which we ought to go to war.
It is something like that. There's a fallibilism in pragmatism that says, though we hold ideas, we are fallible creatures, and so our ideas might be wrong. And because of this, we should not treat them as beliefs, as doctrines, which, when others disagree with us about them, are a basis for war. Now, in Menand's account, as I was saying, it seems to me that Holmes fits this account fairly well, though I actually have some questions about even Holmes. But when we get to James and Peirce and Dewey, then it seems that the account is not so neat, because when Menand tells us about these figures, they turn out to be people who didn't have much to do with the Civil War. In James's case, he had a couple of brothers who fought in the Civil War, and he was obviously close to them, and their experiences affected him, but it's unclear that their experiences affected him in the way that would fit Menand's story. Peirce doesn't seem to have had any involvement in the Civil War at all, and Dewey was too young to have been affected by the Civil War. Dewey comes to pragmatism largely by having been influenced by James and Peirce when he was a student. So I think as you move from the early chapters about Holmes to the chapters about James and Peirce and Dewey, the thesis about the Civil War seems to be less well illustrated.
And so all these thinkers at least had one thing in common. They seem to be fallibilists. They seem to realize that we might be mistaken about beliefs, even beliefs we hold very dearly. Where you think he's mistaken is assuming all of them are a reaction to the ideology of the Civil War.
Yes. At any rate, I don't think he's made a case for the major figures, James and Peirce and Dewey. And what's interesting is that Peirce is generally thought of as the originator of pragmatism. That's certainly the person that James credits with having originated the ideas of pragmatism. James was the most influential of the pragmatists in the early period, and the person who got pragmatism on the map, so to speak, by having given several lectures, particularly some lectures at Berkeley, that were very very widely influential. And Dewey was a follower of James. So Holmes, who was the least central in the pragmatist school, best represents Menand's thesis, but seems, when one thinks about it in terms of who was responsible for pragmatism and who best represents his thesis, there's a kind of incongruity, a kind of mismatch in the account. So in that respect, I'm quite skeptical about the account.
Well, actually, there's another way of getting at this question about the explanation of these ideas. He talks later in the book about the decline of pragmatism, especially during the Cold War years. Does he give a similar explanation that the decline can be explained by particular historical circumstances that prompted people to reject pragmatism or at least put it on hold?
Well, this, I think, is this part of the book is a reprise of the earlier theme. That is, that the spirit of the times is what explains the development of ideas, so that in the case of the Cold War, we're supposed to be being presented with a time when ideologies were very powerful, and a philosophy that rejected ideologies and that rejected the view that there were certain truths that were hard and rigid and one should be certain about them, truths about freedom, truths about markets, truths about the nature of society, and so on. That in these times, a philosophy like pragmatism is bound to be less influential. So his theme is repeated there in terms of his account of the decline of pragmatism by his saying that the ideas have a force in life according to the spirit of the times.
To go back to the origins of pragmatism for a moment, certainly one of the other ideas that was very much in the air, at least as the later pragmatists came in the scene, was Darwin's evolutionary theory. According to Menand, this also plays some role in the development of pragmatism. Could you at least briefly explain the ways in which it did?
Well, this, I think, goes to the relation between fathers and sons that Menand focuses on when he's talking about Holmes and James and Peirce, because the generation of their parents was a generation that believed in natural theology and whose entire intellectual enterprises were shaped by beliefs in natural theology. And natural theology is a view that if we're to understand nature, we have to understand it as having been designed by a supreme intellectual being, namely God, and that how nature and the phenomena of nature work is through the unfolding of God's design. In particular, if we are to understand the variation in species in life, in the range of living things in the world, then they should be understood as having, in each case, realized a certain plan or certain design, a certain blueprint for a species of that type. And variations within a species are just accidents in the model. So that, in a sense, right, species are like different manufactured objects, different cars, say, or different appliances. There might be some individual differences among the appliances, but they all fit a certain model, which is one that is the basis of an intelligent design. Now, in the post-Civil War period, which is now the generation of the pragmatists, there was a great deal of influence of Darwin on thinking about natural phenomena, and in particular, a great challenge to the natural theology of the previous generation. And it's under the influence of Darwin's tack on natural theology that the pragmatists developed their views, according to Menand. That is, this is a secondary influence in the development of pragmatist views, namely the rejection of natural theology as the way to think about the study of natural phenomena. And one way, I think, to see the connection is that on the view of natural theology, the way into the study of nature is by grasping what the ideas are that God is attempting to realize in the designs of the world that he is implementing, so that one can, as it were, come to an understanding with certainty about the world on the basis of a grasp of how an intelligent being would design the world in a certain way. And with the attack on natural theology comes the additional idea that the world does not, as it were, realize an already intellectually laid out plan, but is in a certain kind of flux. And the study of natural phenomena is a study of this flux and the way things change. And so to start or to apply very fixed ideas with a certain kind of certitude about them, because these are the ideas that a supreme intellectual being would have used in creating the world, is the wrong way to go about studying a natural phenomena understood as always in flux. So I think in that way, the Darwinian influence on just general scientific thinking also had influence on the pragmatists themselves.
Okay, in the last third of the show, I want to expand on some themes that you've at least mentioned and some we've not yet discussed. This is Ideas and Issues. My guest today is John Dee, professor of philosophy at Northwestern University, and we're discussing Louis Menand's A Metaphysical Club. Certainly one thing that comes out in the book The Metaphysical Club is that a number of the pragmatists, especially he mentions Holmes, I think, in Dewey in this regard, were deeply committed to the idea of freedom of speech. And yet their arguments for freedom of speech seem to be somewhat different than those that perhaps many of us are accustomed to. Their arguments seem to grow out of this belief about beliefs, this idea about ideas. I wonder if you could briefly explain that, and then maybe we can discuss it a bit more.
Well, the two figures who are important figures for the defense of freedom among the pragmatists are Holmes and Dewey. There isn't really much about James and Peirce with regard to the defense of freedom of speech. But both Holmes and Dewey are famously associated with the defense of freedom. In Holmes's case, Holmes wrote very important opinions in Supreme Court cases when he was on the United States Supreme Court that were interpretations of the First Amendment and that have come to represent defenses of the First Amendment against encroaches by Congress in particular on freedom of speech. In Dewey's case, Dewey was a great defender of academic freedom and was an organizer of the American Association of University Professors, which is an organization of academics developed for defending academic freedom, and he was quite instrumental in that. And he was also just a general liberal and progressive in politics and a defender of freedom of speech and other freedoms that are associated with liberal philosophy. In Menand's view, these defenses of freedom, Holmes's and Dewey's, are somehow reflective of their pragmatism, because he seems to think that it's because they didn't believe that ideas mattered all that much, that ideas were things into with which one could invest any kind of certitude or any kind of hard conviction, that the defense of freedom was important. That is, if you actually had convictions of the sort that were opposed to pragmatism, or that the pragmatists opposed, then there would be less interest in defending freedom. This is, I think, Menand's view. And in this way, he thinks that their defense of freedom springs from their view about the nature of human ideas and human beliefs.
The way you put that makes it sound as if you have some misgivings about that interpretation. Am I misreading you?
No, I think it's a stretch. As I see both Holmes and Dewey, they're basically defending a liberal philosophy of the progressive stripe at the time of I guess this would be the early 20th century. And liberal philosophy at that time was very much willing to, as it were, defend human freedoms of various sorts, not from an old-fashioned view, but in the sense of giving people opportunities to develop their capacities and powers. In many respects, the ideas come from John Stuart Mill, and one can see both in Holmes's writings and in Dewey the influence of John Stuart Mill. And Mill is not particularly a pragmatist in his thinking. He is an empiricist and he is a fallibilist, and these are important common elements between Mill's thought and the kind of liberal thinking that Mill represents and pragmatism. But by no means is it some kind of pragmatist view in Mill that underlies his defense of free speech, very famous defense of free speech in his work on liberty. And as far as I can see, particularly in Holmes, and Holmes's very important appeal to the marketplace of ideas in one of his Supreme Court decisions, he's largely echoing Mill's defense of free speech in On Liberty.
Okay, so, but the following might at least be true. I mean, one of the reasons why you may want the marketplace of ideas is if you are truly a fallibilist, then you think that the only way that you're going to get to better ideas is to have open discussion of various perspectives. So might that be at least a commonality between pragmatism and this sort of defense of a free speech?
Well, except that better ideas, both for Mill and for Holmes, in Holmes' opinion, are just ideas which are true. And the importance of a marketplace of ideas is the importance of having open discussion for the search for truth, so that when we attempt to come to a better understanding of the world and of ourselves and attempt to achieve knowledge, we need to be open to different ideas in order to grasp truths, in order to gain the truth. And the commitment to truth in this argument is not an especially pragmatist idea, and it's certainly in James and James's views of truth, it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense, since James, in a sense, thought that truth was just whatever beliefs turn out to be successful or that work for people in terms of what makes them happier or live better or something like that, rather than what satisfies the conditions of knowledge. So unless Holmes was, in particular, a follower of James on the matter of truth, and there's no evidence that he was, I think the appeal to the marketplace of ideas as necessary, that is, to have a free market of ideas as necessary for gaining the truth, is not particularly consistent with pragmatist thought.
Okay, so fallibilism might be something in common with the two, but where they may differ is over what one means by and how one might attain truth.
Well, fallibilism is not the whole of pragmatism. It's what pragmatists share with other good empiricists, with in the area of the theory of knowledge, namely that we should always be open to the possibility that what we believe is false. But pragmatism goes a lot farther than that, or at least pragmatism of the James variety.
Well, in fact, let's pursue that in the last 3 minutes of the show. That sometimes Manan certainly uses the language which suggests that pragmatists don't think that truth is at all like what the average person thinks it is. Maybe you could say a little bit about what Manan's view of truth and objective knowledge might be, and perhaps whether you think it's an adequate account or even an adequate representation of what pragmatists would say.
I think that it's not entirely clear what Manan's view is, because he's not writing a philosophical book. He's telling a story, and in the course of telling the story, he deals with certain philosophical ideas, and it's clear that he's influenced by certain philosophical ideas, particularly ones that are contemporary and very influential in the humanities and the soft social sciences in colleges and universities today. And those ideas are that there aren't any absolute truths of any kind, that as far as our ideas and our beliefs go, they're entirely changeable, and they are, one might say, relatively true to our circumstances. But if our circumstances change, then those beliefs which we regard as true are not true in different circumstances. So there's a kind of relativism about truth that is reflected in Manan's treatment of the subject. Now, that kind of relativism seems to me coincident with James's thought. That is, one could see similar kind of relativism in James's view that beliefs are true according as they are effective in people's lives. Change the circumstances where a belief is no longer effective in someone's life, and you can then say, well, it isn't a true belief. But it's certainly not coincident with Peirce's view of beliefs and ideas. Peirce had a clear understanding of beliefs and ideas as capable of objective truth, and he had offered a very influential account of that in terms of the idea of truth consisting in what, over the long term, people who investigated using scientific methods a certain issue or question would come to agree upon. That is, he believed that people, given enough time, no matter where their starting place was in investigating a question or an issue, would converge on an answer, and that convergent point represents truth, not truth relative to circumstances, but truth in some absolute sense. So Manan's account of pragmatism seems, in terms of it, the skepticism about objective knowledge, seems at best coincident with James and not at all coincident with Peirce.
Okay, well, I hate to say it, John, we're out of time. I appreciate very much your appearing on the show today.
Well, I enjoyed being on the show.
Yeah. I've been speaking with John Dee, professor of philosophy at Northwestern University, and we've been discussing Louis Manan's book, The Metaphysical Club, A Story of Ideas in America. This is Hugh LaFollette for Ideas and Issues. Good day.